Welcome to episode 72 of I Dream of Cameras, the podcast about cameras and camera collecting. My name is Jeff Greenstein.
And my name is Gabe Sachs. Welcome to the podcast. We are on location.
This has never happened before.
This is completely new. We are using a Zoom H6 recorder and a microphone, and hopefully some of this works. It's going to be very, very exciting. But we are at Cameras and Coffee, put on by Katie Bonzer. And we are very, very, very excited about it. You can look up LA Photography Club and see all about it. But it's one of those really, really fun events. And you get to sit around and enjoy cameras. There's tons of cameras here.
Yeah, I've seen some excellent cameras and then also some digital ones.
What are you saying?
There's actually some pretty cool stuff here. Okay, you guys know how I have railed against painting cameras. Well, there's a gentleman over there with a yellow and white Canon P, which ordinarily I would recoil in horror, but his is actually very attractive.
It is really a cool camera, but there's so many great cameras here, and it's just like sort of being in a club where everyone gets you. You know, I mean, actually, when I sit here, I realize, oh my God, all these people get my insanity. I'm not stared at like, really, you have how many cameras? So everyone has the same addiction, and everyone has amazing stuff here, and we're very excited to be here.
Let's talk about what we brought, okay? I brought the ZVSP. I refer you back to prior episodes if you want to know what that means. I am wearing a t-shirt with a Nikon SP on it and shooting with one. Am I the coolest person here?
You know what? Jeff is the coolest person here. I will just say that, you know, not because I have to or that he's staring at me, but he is the coolest person here. I brought the Contorex Bullseye, which is a very light 652 pounds, but I enjoy it, and I'm very excited to bring it. It's a beautiful camera I don't use enough, and I'm going to start working with it. What I wanted to tell you is that, you know, Jeff, you were asking about the medium format, my medium format shoot.
Yes.
Which I did. I went to Canyon Coffee with my friend Julia, and we shot, and I had an issue with my Mamiya RC67. And I was very, very concerned because I love this camera, and I could not focus it. And I said, oh my gosh. So I called the usual suspects, Dave Tata, who is next to me right now, and Rafael Hernandez. And Rafael said, you know, sometimes the glass screen gets a little misaligned and there's a problem. And I said, oh my God, this is the worst thing ever. And I don't know, I get home and I realize I've put the wrong contact in the wrong eye.
Amazing. I love it.
I mean, this was really embarrassing. So the camera's fine. The pictures sort of came out.
The photographer less fine.
It was complete user error. So that was one of those annoying things.
I think we should go ambush Katie, who is the architect of this gathering. Should we go ambush her or should I call her over?
I think we're going to do both.
Okay.
Stay tuned.
We're sitting here with Katie, who is the goddess behind Los Angeles Photography Club and the organizer of this Cameras and Coffee meetup. And I guess, you know, we don't really know how to speak to people because we're introverts and we are not accustomed to speaking to other humans.
Well, I will say this. Yeah, I was at the very first one. And I remember getting here, and there were probably six people. And by the time an hour went by, there were tons of people. And it was the greatest thing. So tell us a little bit how it started, actually why you wanted to do this.
Yeah, so I wanted to start a club because I really wanted to build a community of photographers and other creatives. And one way to do that is to get people together on a regular basis. And so I started with the camera and coffee meetups, doing it once a month. And just having a social sit-down get-together, I wasn't finding that in LA. I wasn't finding one that met on a regular basis, and so I decided to start my own. And I think it's been really great, and I think people really like it because we can get to know each other. And I think it's kind of hard to connect at events or on photo walks, so this is just to sit and bring our cameras, drink coffee, and hang out.
Well, I love it particularly because, as people know, I work out, you know, constantly. And I'm always at the gym, and I'm always hiking and things like
You're
that.
You're muscle-bound.
I'm... what?
You're muscle-bound.
Yes, I'm muscle-bound. I have trouble moving. But this is cameras and coffee. We sit in one place. We look at each other's cameras.
There's no walking.
There's no walking. It's the best time ever. So because I get so much exercise outside of these events, it's very exciting to just sit. And so you've seen it grow. What have you learned about, like, are there cameras you didn't know about? Like, tell us a little bit about how, you know, things have progressed.
Yeah, so I primarily shot digital. I'm a Canon girl. I didn't know anything about Leica, Hasselblads. I've learned so much about film photography, medium format, from people bringing their different cameras. And people overall have been very lovely. And people, if they love what they do, they love to talk about it and share. And a lot of photographers are more introverted, but they feel more comfortable coming to this and sharing because you have common interests or you see a camera that you've always wanted to use. And people open up and they love sharing about what they use. And they get to talk to other people who really enjoy it as well. And it's been really wonderful to see people make friends and share what they love to do, like I do.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, because you immediately have this thing in common. It's easy to talk to people. It's especially for introverts that are camera nerds. I mean, it's the best thing ever. So I find it so relaxing and like the best way. I just wish there were more of them.
Yeah, I wanted to say, along similar lines, one of the things I like about this gathering is it's pretty much 50-50 male-female. And I think you've created a space for female photographers, which is, to me, distinctly different than the usual dominated by guys who just emerged blinking into the light from their basement. It seems a little more kind of female-friendly. Is that something you were thinking about when you started this organization?
Yes, that was the other main point, creating an environment where everyone is welcome, especially women photographers. A lot of the groups do tend to lean more male, or kind of just the environment, the name of the groups, just tend to attract a certain type of person. Yeah. And so I was just really into opening up to everyone, and especially women, to feel comfortable coming into a space, because if you're more introverted or you don't know anyone, it can be kind of difficult coming into a space than if you don't really see anyone. It looks like you or represents you. It can be tough. So, yeah, definitely always trying to get more women to come. And I love all of the women that show up. And I've made incredible friends and got to see what they do. And it's been really lovely.
I love it. Thank you so much, Katie. Remember, go to
Los Angeles Photography Club on Instagram. We don't have a website.
Los Angeles Photography Club on Instagram.
Yeah, it's the greatest thing. And if you're in Los Angeles, come hang out. We'd love to talk to you.
Thanks, Katie.
Thank you both.
So we are at LA Photography. Well, where am I? Hold on. We are at LA Photography Club and the meetup Cameras and Coffee, and we are going to talk to people about what cameras they have. Jeff is looking around right now, and let's see what happens.
Here's a guy with a Hasselblad. Come over here. Get over here. Get over here. This is my interview style. It's assaultive. Oh, he's insisting on taking our photograph first. Yeah, okay. All right, come over. Tell us what you got. Tell us your name. Tell us what you got.
Hi, I'm Brennan, and I have a Hasselblad 500C. Yeah,
I love this camera. I absolutely love it.
Absolutely gorgeous. What is your favorite thing about this camera? I feel like I should have a good question.
No batteries.
No.
That's about it.
Right.
Really. And I just like the form factor.
And tell me about the
carrying that thing. Well, thanks.
Tell me about the backs.
The backs?
You know, because oh my gosh, you've got the fancy old fashioned. You look through the back, you look for the number.
Oh.
That's amazing. And what lens are you shooting with?
The 80 millimeter right there. Yeah. The 2.8 classic.
And is this your main squeeze?
Right now it is, yeah. Right, yeah.
What are you lusting after? What camera?
Probably a Lindhoff 4x5.
Ooh.
Don't you understand that 4x5 is difficult?
Yes, very much.
I'll just give you a little insight on my life is that it scares me. And my biggest fear comes from I know that I'm going to spend all this time setting up a shot, and the truth is that I'm going to mess up the film. Yeah. That's my biggest fear.
Yes, yes, I understand that completely.
I love it. Well, thanks for talking to us.
Thank you.
Thanks again.
All right, on we go. Podcast.
Thank you.
Let's keep going. Just keep going.
Okay, great.
Here we go.
Here we go.
Walking over here.
Here we go.
I have to talk to her because look what she's got in her hot shoe. Tell us your name.
Is this like recording right now? What's being recorded?
Are you shy?
Where does the camera come from?
No, we have a podcast. We're recording.
Oh, it's a podcast?
Yes, hi. Tell us your name. Tell us what you've got there.
Okay, Irina, over here. I have a Nikon.
Yes.
Z7 with a joystick on the top.
Isn't that amazing? And it's to amuse people.
That is so good. And do people come up all the time and say, what is going on with your camera? And they think it operates the camera, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty low-key, so I usually keep it in the bag. But whenever I get it out, it's like people are like, oh, what is this? Yeah.
I love it. Thanks for talking to us.
All right. Thank you. Thank you. All right, on we go. Oh, my God. Oh, he's got a Rolleiflex 35.
Come on.
Look, like, go attack him.
We have to go around this side. As we're going around here. Okay, come here. Dave Tata, come here.
Ah, here we go, Dave Tata.
Here we go.
All right.
You've heard him mentioned on the show 10,000 times.
Reverently discussed on our Smash It.
Reverently.
Reverently.
Really?
A hushful.
We
like we're talking about the Pope.
Oh.
The way you would talk about the Pope.
Well, I don't know if I'm worthy of that, but thank you.
Oh, yes. The multi-talented Dave Tata. Dave, what do you have today?
So today I brought a Leica M9 because I love CCD sensors still. It's paired with a Canon Serenar, which is like an older 51.8. I never used this lens when I first got it because it came attached to a Leica 3F.
Right.
But I dusted it off recently and I shot a few shots with it. And I was like, oh, you know, this is a surprisingly competent lens. And so I was like, oh, I'll take it out today, shoot people with it and see if I want to keep it.
Can we talk about something?
Yeah.
Okay. Dave, the bottom of your camera is brassing. The M9... can brass?
It is a black paint MP, so yes, it is definitely brassing.
That is the coolest thing ever.
Sexy.
Here's one thing that Dave and I go back and forth with religiously is I'll say, hey, Dave, how sharp is this lens? And then he'll go, and he'll literally do tests, and we'll go back and forth that only two nerdy people could appreciate pictures of nothing that are sharp and sharp tests.
No, yeah. So during the pandemic, I went kind of manual SLR crazy, started buying up lenses for Canon, Nikon, Pentax, Olympus, Minolta, Contax. And then I realized I had a copy stand. So what I did was I took an old Sammy's contract that just has fine print on the whole page. And I would just mount my Canon EOS R. I went on Amazon, bought all the adapters, and I would just test out every lens from wide open to f8, and then yeah, just pixel peep every lens, center, middle, edge, and then yeah, I just kind of figured out which lenses perform the best.
It's the best reference ever. I really absolutely love it. And what are you thinking? Okay, you have to have one camera and one lens, okay,
for the now, apocalypse,
right? And we have the same, Dave and I have the same addiction, so there's a lot of cameras in our lives. So now you have to get rid of everything. You need one camera, one film camera, one lens. What's it going to be?
Do I still have access to batteries?
Yes, you still have access to batteries.
Oh, that makes it more difficult because I was going to say the Leica MP with possibly like a 35 Summicron is spherical. But if I have access to batteries, it might be the It might be the FM3A, the Nikon FM3A.
Hey. Listen to this. We've learned a lot about these Nikon cameras. They're well made.
No, it's kind of almost a perfect SLR because it's the only one I know of where fully automatic with aperture priority, But if the battery dies, which it often does, it works fully mechanically all the way up to 1/4,000th of a second, which is kind of insane. And the viewfinder is amazing. Really well put together camera. It kind of ticks all the boxes for me and came with me to Copenhagen. Has been with me to Tokyo a few times.
First of all, I'm so jealous. Yes. You get to go back and you have family in Japan and you get to see all those camera shops. That's the thing that you see all the time on TikTok. You see it all the time on Instagram. And you're going, I want to go to this camera shop. So I'm going to have to go back there at some point.
Yeah, so, you know, the other kind of added bonus about that right now is that the yen is very weak right now. So whenever I go there, I always find really good deals because I do the conversion on my phone and I was like, oh, that's like 30% cheaper than it usually would be. So yeah, there's plenty of deals to be found everywhere.
Maybe we'll do an I Dream of Cameras trip to Tokyo.
Well, yeah, I've been saying this for years. Yeah. It's the only reason we're doing this podcast.
Just so we can travel. Well, Dave, thanks so much, and you'll hear your name mentioned a million more times.
Great to see you, man. All right, so we're going to ask you the same questions we would ask someone about a camera, except we're asking you that about your dog. How long have you had this dog?
About 4 years.
Is this your favorite make of dog?
It is a hybrid of my favorite make. They come half poodle, so it is really efficient. I think they have the best function as a dog because they're hypoallergenic. So that is very important for the...
I don't even know what kind of dog that is.
This is a half poodle, half Maltese.
Named?
His name is Vinny, short for Vincent Van Gogh.
Very nice. Because he has one ear?
He still has two. I got to make sure he makes some good friends.
Would you say this is a good travel dog?
He is not a good travel dog because he's a little bit too large to be a pocket size. But, you know, with the right occasion, good setup, he's travelable.
What is your dream dog?
My dream dog is my baby boy, of course, of course. Vinny, Vincent, yes.
Tell me your name again. Your name?
Oh, I'm Izzy.
Okay, nice to meet you. Nice to meet you.
Thank you, Izzy.
All right,
so
thank
great.
You.
Thank you, guys. We're very professional, as
right,
you can imagine.
Yes. What is your name?
Brenton.
Okay, tell us about everyone. Everyone has the same name at this gathering. Okay, that's totally fine. Okay, tell us about what your camera is.
So right now I am holding a Canon P, but what makes it so special is it's a custom paint job from Shuedo Camera, from based in Taiwan.
We've seen Shuedo. I follow them. Mm-hmm. I've never seen one of their works.
We've never seen one in person. This is beautiful.
By the way, okay, could you just describe it? I don't want to. I try to describe what we are looking at.
It's pretty straightforward, but it's all white body, but with this bright yellow lettering, with the marquees and all the markings on the.
You left out something.
Oh, this is mine. I left it there. That's a sticker.
Wait, is that a sticker?
Yeah, it's just a sticker.
Oh, I thought that was part of the paint job.
No.
It's a yellow milk carton. Can you tell us the significance? What does the milk carton mean to you?
It holds milk.
What more would you want? Yeah, I mean, seriously,
Did you grow up on a farm? Were you starving in the desert? You came across a milk carton. It saved your life.
No, milk is good. It's good for your bones.
Cook up a story like what I just described.
I hate to piss on your parade, but. You know.
What made you want a Canon P?
That's actually a really good question.
It's
because,
a great question.
Because it was either this or a Leica.
Yeah.
Right.
This is different and cooler in my mind. I love Leica, but I'm just saying this is a really cool camera.
Yeah. It's definitely an attention grabber.
No question.
Everyone knows what a Leica is, and it's like, okay, move along. But this, it's like.
I notice you have a 35mm f1.7 Voigtlander Ultron on here. Okay, how did you select that lens for your machine? These are hard-hitting questions.
No, I just don't like to think. But really, for my style of photography, I do a lot of like night street photography, and just having that 35 lens is just wide enough for me to like capture
This is not exactly a nighttime camera. This is not a stealth machine.
I can make it
a nighttime camera. Do you dress entirely in white?
Not all the time. Okay. All right, maybe in Colorado.
You shot with this for how long ago did you get this?
Probably for half a year, so it's still relatively new.
So you've been shooting with it and you like the results?
I'm still testing it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a great camera. It's it's a beauty.
Wow. Gorgeous. Can I ask a question? This is an embarrassing question, but was that an incredibly expensive object?
Cannot confirm nor deny.
Okay.
There you go. Perfect.
Thank you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I love it.
Appreciate it.
Okay, first of all, what's your name?
Hey, my name is Saad.
Okay, Saad, let's talk about this. We're putting people on the spot.
Okay.
What is your most favorite camera you've ever used?
Oh, most favorite camera I've ever used is probably like my, that's hard to say, probably like the GH5. Yeah, because it's a Micro Four Thirds. And I just like the look of that. It's similar to like a 16 millimeter, right, type of thing. And I've done video with it too. And I've just attached so many of these like vintage lenses on this camera. Like the favorite lens I have is a Voigtlander 42-5.
Oh, I want to talk to you about that. So what is the, is that the favorite vintage one you put on there or?
Yeah, I would say so. And then I've also put like other lenses, like a Canon FD, and my father's Minolta 50mm. So that was one of the first lenses I used on my GH2, like back in 2012 when I learned how to use a camera, shooting manual. I basically taught myself how to use a camera because I use these old vintage lenses with no autofocus. So it just kind of forced me to be more mindful of how I just, you know, observe people and like animals or whatever I'm shooting. So.
And what about that Voigtlander that you love? Is it look
fast.
Or feel?
It's fast and it's the look, but it's also like that Voigtlander one is a 0.95, and I don't like to use like flash photography because I like shooting candids. I like being like a ninja, you know, and it's like it gives you this non like invasive approach to like photography, and that's helped me a lot because I learned a lot by just shooting friends and family home movies, things like that, and I've carried that into just like now I'm trying to do more street stuff and like events, things like that, and I like shooting candids, and when you have fast lenses that look really good with high quality glass, it just feels like you're capturing like a moment in time in history. And I feel like these are the images that you can't repeat later on.
I
to the moment, you know. So.
I love that. Thank you so much. Thanks, I love it. Thanks, man. Tell us your name.
Julian.
His name is not Brennan.
We may know each other, so I'm going to pretend we don't know each other.
Okay.
Julian, what do you do? What do you do for a living?
I'm an adjunct English professor at a local community college. I'm also a camera person for a summer concert series, occasional professional concert photographer, occasional videographer, and also do some event production.
Let me just tell you something. When I want to feel smart, I talk to Julian. Julian, anything when you have English professor in any title, it's very impressive. But what I will tell you is, to me, Julian, you're one of the... You're always, for some reason, in the right place at the right time. Let's talk about what was your most recent acquisition that you won?
I happened to win at the opening of the LA Film Lab, which is an amazing new space, this fantastic camera bag.
It's beautiful, everyone. It's the Gitzo?
It is the Gitzo, which I'm just learning how to use it because it's got all these great little compartments and all these little locking little zippers, but yeah, it's fabulous and definitely by far the nicest camera bag I've ever had.
Okay, and to go back to being in the right time, right place at the right time, can you tell everyone about how you acquired your Hasselblad?
A friend of mine had two. He called me up and he said, you know, basically the short version is he had two Hasselblads, he was gonna sell one, he's basically only gonna sell it to me. He bought it like 20 years ago, and he sold it to me for the same price he got it 20 years ago.
Okay, that's the best story ever. That's the story I really wanted to talk about.
I go to his house, and he's got a 500 CM and a 501C on the table, and he says, just pick the one you want.
Just pick the one you want.
That happens to me all the time.
Oh, man, if that only happened.
Somebody gave me a car the other day.
We just walked by.
Yeah, they thought I was the valet. They gave me the keys. They said, you know, and I was like, thanks.
Take it with you. Thank you so much, Julian. We love seeing you at all these meetups.
Oh, I love talking to you guys as well. And you're probably the only two people that know most of the weird cameras that I happen to have. So I appreciate that.
Thanks. He's got the best. Thanks, buddy.
There is more. A few days ago, we had an opportunity to interview Joe Geyer. He is Mint and Rare on Instagram, and he owns an outstanding camera shop in Vienna, Austria, which I had the opportunity to visit last fall. We loved talking to this guy. Super friendly, sweet, knowledgeable. I wish this conversation was twice as long. Anyway, stay tuned. Here's our interview with Joe Geyer. Please welcome to our show, Joe Geyer. Runs Joe Geyer Camera in Vienna, Austria, Mint and Rare on Instagram, an extraordinary camera dealer, an incredibly nice guy. He's got a Canon Olive F1 over his right shoulder, which I am salivating over. We haven't even gotten to the other stuff in the frame. Welcome to the program, Joe.
Welcome.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for being on the Smash Hit podcast.
We're worldwide.
The Smash Hit podcast.
I really like how this is a gentleman, you can tell, who knows how to endear himself to the hosts. This is how you do it. You start
absolutely
out by using the phrase Smash Hit podcast.
Can I just start with something?
Yes, go ahead.
I just want to say, for the maybe two of you that aren't familiar with Joe's site and shop and Mint and Rare, if you just are in the middle of your day and you're stressed out and you just want to drool, just go right to Mint and Rare. It'll be the best release ever. It's absolutely amazing.
Like, yes, Jeff is speechless. I had the privilege of visiting Joe's shop.
So lucky.
During a trip to Vienna last fall, and I believe I said this on the Smash Hit podcast, it is like a portal into like a time machine where every extraordinary camera you have ever wanted is on the shelf and in absolutely beautiful condition. Joe has such extraordinary taste and is so meticulous and perfectionistic in his inventory that you will find the camera you want and it will be gorgeous. That's enough of me talking. Joe, I want to hear a little bit about, could you do the boring biographical stuff?
How it started.
How you got into the business of running this extraordinary camera dealer.
Well, first of all, thanks for all the compliments. I really appreciate it. Mint and Rare says it all, basically. It has to be really fine, and everything else you can find everywhere else, basically, on the web. And so we focus on really pristine stuff. Where did it start? It started... when I was 8 years old, basically, I went with my father, who is in camera retail since 81, I think. I went to the camera fairs and did the small stuff there. I went through boxes. I sold the filters, the adapter rings, the lens caps, stuff, the straps and instruction books and stuff like that. And went with him on every camera fair. So I got into that pretty early, I would say.
That's very early.
And he had a shop, and I admired the stuff there, and I always wanted one of those Canon EOS 300s, of which you have back in the 90s, and I couldn't afford it, and he never gave me one, so I had to sell a lot of lens caps, and eventually, after a few years, I got my first analog Yashica FXD, which I loved.
Oh,
and I used that on every trip and used it quite extensively, I would say. But on my first trip, I made 45 exposures on a roll of 36 exposure. And
that's a great trick.
And after I came back, I realized the film wasn't in properly. So this wasn't meant for me, basically, but I really loved the technical stuff and the mechanics and the work behind that and the aesthetics and the precision mechanics. So I stayed with that, basically. I'm the worst photographer you can imagine. And my God, I can't tell you. Anyway, I loved the technical aspects, the rarities, the small differences on the little details on collectible stuff. And so, yeah. But with 14, I started in camera retail, basically. Wow. And sold all that.
In the current location?
No,
I started, where did it start?
I started in a small shop in the center of Vienna. And we sold all those Nikon Coolpix cameras and digital stuff. And but we also still had a film development department in the base. So we stayed analog for quite a long time. And after 2.5 years, I switched to another company where I stayed for 10 years. And I thought I could do that myself as well. And in the way I think is right. And yeah, started 10 years ago now. This year is our 10th anniversary.
That's amazing.
Wow.
We're trying to find and fix a date for a small celebration. You're invited. Everybody else is invited.
Oh,
as well.
Hey, we'll be there. It'll be so great.
So it will be 10 years. It was an amazing journey. And we started in a small shop just around the corner. And it went nuts. And stock went up. And there was no space. It was a 75 square meter shop. And now we have, like, I don't know, 6 times more space. And we ran out of space. And here's everything is running out of space. So basically it grew quite fast and we love what we do. And we're here for 10 years. Now.
The district, the block where you are located, there are many vintage camera dealers and also the Westlicht Leica shop is there. Did that grow up around you?
No.
You move to that space? Because how did that happen?
I'm actually the latest edition.
Wow.
Just across the street on the corner, there was the Grafische Versuchs- und Lehranstalt, the graphical school in the 1960s and 70s. And on vice versa, on the street in front of us, they opened the first shop there in the for cameras in the 60s and 70s, right next to that school. And a lot of former employees who came out of that company opened the other shops, which are in the street now. So everything grew around that small street. Or it's only part of the street, actually. It's just within one block. There are five or six shops.
It's all around that intersection. Yeah. It's kind of amazing. So
So if you want to go, if you want a camera in Vienna, you know where to go, basically, and you have several options, which is good, which is fine. And people really enjoy that, strolling around and checking out all the shops. So I was the latest edition, actually, here.
Right.
That's great.
So you came in, you're saying that the current shop opened about 10 years ago. So I'm thinking, was that kind of when the beginning, I don't know the difference between how things went in Europe versus in the US, but by that point, the sort of film photography renaissance was just starting to take hold. Was that kind of what helped fuel the growth of your shop? Did you notice that more and more people were coming in, either looking to buy or sell old film cameras? How did that play out of where you are?
Actually not. Actually, in Europe, the second hype for analog film just began with instant photography around 2015, 2016, I would say. And then all those young photographers who got an iPhone, got an Instax camera or a Polaroid camera, and then went to the Canon A1s and Pentax K1000s and stuff like that. So the 35mm run started actually 15, 16. But we come from the collector's market, basically. We've never had that entry-level section until that started, I would say.
Wow.
We started right. with more entry-level collector's cameras, like a very clean Exacta, I don't know, you name it, whatever. And then we got into all these Canon A1s and Pentax K1000s and Nikon FMs and stuff like that. But it started with collectible stuff, actually.
I want to start then by talking about those collector cameras, because one of the things I found so interesting about visiting shops in Europe was the entirely different emphasis that you see
right.
in camera stores in Europe versus the US. For example, this is a small thing, but like I bought a Pentacon FM in Prague. That is a camera you will never see in a US camera shop ever.
Yeah.
Ever. It is, I mean, perhaps it was because I was in, you know, the Czech Republic that I happened to see dozens of these on the shelves. But so it was very interesting to me. You talk about Exacta. That's another camera we don't see over here all that much. Mm-hmm. And so it was very interesting for me to see the difference between the two. On the other hand, Leica everywhere. I see a Leica logo over your shoulder.
Yeah.
Was Leica collecting kind of the baseline when you talk about like collector cameras? Was it primarily Leica and Contax and some of those other vintage brands that were sort of the base for you guys?
Leica is basically the cash cow of the whole collector's market, I would right. say. It doesn't have to be, it's not the best camera on the planet, but the best is different for everybody.
Right. Right.
But what we want are very clean and perfectly working examples of any kind. If it's an Alpa, if it's a Leica, if it's a Hasselblad, Bronica, whatever, you know. The thing is, Leica is the cash cow, so it's the number one brand. It's like Rolex in watches. It's that simple.
Right. Right.
Rolex is not the best watchmaker in the world. It's the most reliable. It's the longest existing or privately owned brand with a lot of prestige and reputation. The same with Leica. Although I think the vintage cameras are much better built actually than the modern cameras. Quality control was a lot better back then.
Yeah.
But we would have a Pentacon FM if it would be a working camera. biggest problem are shutter curtains, light leaking shutter curtains, shutter speeds, and to have that continuously perfectly working. We want to service everything. We want to have a warranty which we can give to our customers. And unfortunately, that's not the case with many Exactas, many early SLR cameras built in Germany. But you surely can find a lot of Contax SLR cameras in Eastern Europe,
right?
Czech, Poland, wherever. Not so much in the US, I think. I think there are more Alpas in the US than maybe Pentacon SLR cameras, because Alpa had a subsidiary in the US, as well as like I think Beaulieu or Bolex had a subsidiary in the US as well. So yeah, for sure, export reasons. Yeah.
Do you think, I know this may be a hard question to answer, but when someone comes into your shop to buy a Leica, for example, do you think they're buying it as a collector or as a shooter or both? What is the sense you get from the customers who come in?
Mixed feelings.
yeah.
There is a third variant right now, which is to have it as a beautiful accessory around your waist. Which hurts my brain, heart, and stomach. It's, but yeah, that's reality. But we are salesmen, so we also sell cameras to those kind of people who need a nice accessory. But anyway, most people, it's like in Japan, they want to have a collectible, but that's fully usable. So they right. want to put a film in from time to time. They want to see that it's working. They want a reliable camera. But for the really, really, really rare stuff, where there is, I don't know, 3, 4, 5, 10 cameras worldwide in existence, the technical operational function is not as important as the state it is preserved in, sure. obviously.
Right, yeah.
So,
right.
But 9 out of 10 want to use that camera, yeah, I would say.
That's good to hear. All right, I want to let Gabe jump in. I feel like I'm talking.
Well, I'm going to go right to the questions that I know people are going to go nuts over. But in your expert opinion, what you get two choices, okay? What are the two best built cameras all around? That meaning lenses and bodies.
Oh, good
lenses
question.
Lenses and bodies. So you have two choices. You're going to go with these because you know the insides of them and you know how well they're built. What do you think?
Leica or everything?
Everything. You can do everything.
Best built camera for me. I can tell you that from the point of servicing history, for example.
Yep.
In 25 years, I've never had a customer bring in a Nikon F for repair.
Oh, that's amazing.
Wow.
Never.
Wow.
Wow.
If that camera is used and is not dropped or smashed against walls, that's a workhorse, basically. Nikon F is maybe one of the most solid cameras.
Gabe is so happy right now. He just bought one.
A beat up one. And I'm so happy.
You can be happy because the meter is working as well, no?
Yes, of course.
So, that's one, I would say. The second best built
what
camera.
About, yeah, ooh. Keep going. This is fantastic.
It's no SLR, to be sure. It's no camera with electronics because they tend to fail. We get a lot of these early 1980s SLRs which now start to not fall apart, but those LCD screens start to get broken or at the end of their lifespan, and so a lot of F3s and early electronic cameras I think are now at the end.
What about in medium format? What's a camera that's built as heartily as
Linhof.
Nikon F in medium format?
Linhof. For sure. Yeah.
Gabe, do you have one of those?
Of course I have one somewhere. Yeah.
No. it's probably the most sturdy camera. I've seen cameras with broken off parts and the camera was still fully working. broken lens. Broken focusing beds, you know, the ones.
Yeah.
Broken corners. Yeah. Total, not just a crack off, you know, and they were still working perfectly. Yeah. You know, it's the company which is the longest still in production for analog cameras of all camera brands. It's quite an amazing company. I was never there in Munich, but it looks like if you go back to the 1970s inside, they still have the old tables and the old showcases and stuff. And there are still just, I think, 20 people working in Linhof and still manufacturing. Quite an amazing.
I have to detour down a side road since you were talking about the challenges of these cameras with electronics and LCD screens. If you are a listener to our Smash Hit podcast, then you know about me and the X-Pan.
Yep.
And you probably also, as a camera dealer, know that there's no other camera like that, really. There's not really a camera that can reproduce what the X-Pan can do in that form factor.
With that said...
Would you recommend people buy that camera? Is that a camera you would recommend people buy as a user? Or would you steer people away from it? I assume they go for pretty much the same amount in your shop that they do anywhere else.
Yeah, yeah. There is no.
What do you think?
There is no choice. If you want to have such results or this kind of, you can't go any other route. That's the only problem. I managed to find one LCD screen spare part for the back of the X-Pan. I sourced it like 3 years or something like that. But the problem is it's a door stopper. If it's not working anymore, it's a door stop.
Yeah.
That's the problem. That's the same with the Context T2, a Context G2, all these electronic stuff. That's really a pain. Like a Mini Luxus, and we stopped servicing those because it doesn't work, basically. We tried it a few times, but it doesn't work. But if you want an X-Pan, you can just buy an X-Pan. You can buy a Horizon, but it's not the same.
No, not the same.
You can buy, there is a 35 millimeter back for the Bronica, which is for the 645 camera, which is quite nice, but it's still not the same. If you want an X-Pen, you have to buy an X-Pen.
Yeah, you have to buy an X-Pen. You alluded to the fact that you have a repair shop on site, which I think is essential for a dealer who deals in the kind of cameras you do at the scale you do. The knowledge that those repair folks have, how do you keep that alive? What is keeping that knowledge alive to keep these cameras that we love so much functioning for another 100 years?
There is a problem. Because a lot of young people are not attracted to learn that stuff. Having a 9-to-5 job in an office, and a lot of young people are not interested in the mechanics. You know, they want something quick, they want to change out parts. It's really like, yeah. He could work in NASA as well. But it's really tough. But we appreciate everybody who's interested and who wants to get in and who wants to learn. You have to start somewhere, dismantle your non-working camera, buy something broken for €5 or €10, dismantle that, try something. If it doesn't work, buy the next one, try it again. I once tried it. I dismantled it, but I could never get it back together. So it's not meant for me. But it is an incredible job. I always say we could make a camera out of a car radio, because these guys are incredible, really incredible.
Wow.
Yeah. How big is your staff of repair people? How many people do you
Two.
Have? Two people.
That's amazing.
And they could work 48 hours a day.
Yeah,
the workload is unbelievable. There are so many people who want to get their camera repaired or their grandfather's camera repaired or they inherited somewhere. The requests are really, really amazing. Yeah.
I've got one. What do you think is absolutely the most underrated camera? There's always people in our audience looking for cameras that they're willing to spend a little money on them, but they want something that maybe's, you know, off the beaten path and aren't sure about. So what's your pick for the most underrated?
Something that's coming very quickly to my mind, but it's going to be very controversial and does not fit into the stuff we usually do. If you want to get for a reasonable price into rangefinder photography, get a Zorki, a good working Zorki.
Oh my goodness.
You can find a pretty nice and working camera for around €100. You can use all kinds of Leica M39 screw mount lenses on them. From the USSR or anywhere, basically. And you get if the camera is working well, you will have a lot of fun with it. Of course, there are bad apples, but you can find bad apples everywhere.
Right.
But yeah. For €100, there is no similar camera which can give you those options. All those fixed focus rangefinder cameras, like this Canon QL17s, Rora 35, they're all priced 2 or 3 times above that.
Crazy.
So this is now still undervalued, in my opinion, because all those cameras everybody loves now because of the Kardashians and some else. So all those Contax T2s and yeah, name it, we've got it. Olympus Mu 2, and prices went insane. Just insane. Crazy. It's just too much, basically. For my taste, it's too much. And we get
Zorky.
To buy wow. people in, to get people to buy different stuff, you know, which is relatively inexpensive compared to such a Mu camera. It's just overpriced, in my opinion.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
But,
What about the, you need a lens for that camera? What's going to be the lens that people are going to be surprised
oh,
that you
I love
pick?
This.
Zorky.
I think for the price, they're all quite fine, I would say. I mean, how much does a 35 2.8 cost with this large protruding rear element? That's also another, I don't know, €100 lens base or something like that. So that's quite. If you get that from Zeiss for Leica or a Leica Summicron, you pay like 10 or 20 times that price. So for a Zorky, get all those Zorky lenses. I mean, you can get a fast 51.5, 85 f/2, 35 2.8, 135. You can get the whole system basically for €500.
That's so amazing.
That's really a nice thing still. Or get into Canon rangefinders, for example. These are really, still really underpriced, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Or the Canon Nikon rangefinders, for example. You know,
We've talked about the Canon P on this podcast. I think the P is incredible. Yeah. So well made. I was really struck by what a solid camera that is. It looks fantastic. And yeah, I was surprised. We said this in our very last episode. Even a Nikon SP is not as expensive as I thought it would be. I thought those were going to be in like the at least over here. I thought those were going to be in like the Leica M3 range. And they're really not. They're a lot cheaper than an M3. And if you go with the other S rangefinders, those are just not as expensive. You can get a Nikon S for a couple of $100s.
Yep. So that's...
And... again, amazing. That's a fantastic recommendation. Now, we said we were going to talk about Leica because it is, of course, the, what is it? 70th anniversary of the Leica M3. That was sort of the pretext for us having this conversation.
Yeah.
Gabe brought up something in our last episode that he heard about the build quality of the early M's versus the later ones. Would you care to comment on that about... Like if you're steering someone toward a Leica M, whether you would steer them toward more a 2 or 3 versus a 5 or a 6, or 4.
It depends always on what you want to do with it, basically. So
as a shooter,
M3 or M2, basically, or an M6 because of the built-in exposure meter, obviously. But apart from that, M3 because of the viewfinder, or an M2 because of the 35mm frame lines.
Yeah.
These are my choices, I would say, and the most requested also in our shop, basically. So
yeah.
Seldom really wants an M4-2 or an M4P. It's either one of those three, never an M5, unfortunately. But we all know why.
Because it's beautiful.
Yeah.
Gabe has one now. Do you still have yours?
I traded for one, of course.
It's the ugly duckling that now, over in the U.S. now, the M5 is becoming kind of voguey.
Yeah.
Like, people want that thing now. Because it's the only M, you know, that people disdain. Other than the CL, which I want to talk about in a minute. But people don't like the M5 because it's super ugly and ungainly, but it's a very functional. Gabe loved shooting with his.
Very fun.
Yeah, it's larger. It's not as aesthetic as the other M cameras, but it served its purpose well. First camera with an incorporated light meter, and they started from there. Yeah, there was a small hype in Europe as well, but it lasted for only, I think, half a year. and then people went back to the M6, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. What about the CL? I don't see any of those over your shoulder. I know that camera has meter problems at times. But what do you think of that machine?
It's the best camera Minolta's ever made. The CL is it's a nice little companion. The best about the CL is the 40mm Summicron.
The 40. I was going to say, I agree with you.
Not just the focal 40, length, man. But they made a good choice. They started out, they wanted to make a 40 f2.8 in the beginning. And they eventually decided to make that f2 and go with that. That's really the best part. It's compact, yes. To repair the light meter is a nightmare, unfortunately, and often not possible, unfortunately. Price point wise, it's still an attractive option, especially when the M6 traded at the peak like 1 year ago. This was very interesting, but we have none in stock, and they sell out every time, and very quickly usually. So there is still demand, and people and people like those. So good camera, it is, and it's.
I love mine, and it primarily because of that 40. Yeah. Of course, the CL is the only Leica with a 40mm frame line.
Yeah,
I just love that lens. Even if you never change to any other lens, it is just a fantastic. I mean, obviously the price point is very different, but it's basically the same size as a Canon G3 QL17. I would spend the money and get the CL.
Yeah.
You have interchangeable lenses. And if the meter works, that's the thing. My meter has hung on for, I think I got mine about 20 years ago, my CL, and it has been flawless. I'm afraid it's going to die on me at some point. By the way, I have the Lights Minolta CL because, Joe, I am such a weirdo that I wanted that rather than the one that says Leica on the front.
Of course you did.
So, yes, of course I did.
Let me ask you about when did you see the surge? There's sort of a time here that a surge in black paint Leicas went crazy. I mean, there was a time where I'd say about, out here, maybe 7 years ago, you could still, even though there were those outrageous rare ones, you could still buy, like in New York at B&H, you'd buy a, black paint M4 like I did for $2,300, and they thought, oh, I don't know if I'm going to get $2,300, and now they'll pay anything for it, like to get back that, any of those things. But did you find a surge out there as well? Was it around? Was it earlier? Was it more recently?
This started in the early 80s because people tended and Lights still did that at that time. If you had a M2 or M3, which was really beat up, they would restore it for you to a brand new condition, but they used later parts. So it's very easy to distinguish actually. But the trend was to get cameras in the best condition possible, always. In your collection. So a lot of private collectors used that option and sent those cameras in for a complete revision, actually, which now people want cameras in original condition. No matter if it's speed up or original, it must be original. So that's one of the big differences now. But I think it's the same with cars, but starting right now, actually. You can buy a Corvette in fully restored condition, but now people want original beat up condition with rust and pay more for that. So that's the same here, same as in watches, basically. But everything comes in waves. The peak of I have to say it, overpriced, stupidly overpaid prices for collectibles was in, I think, 2012, 2013, yeah, approximately. Then it slowed down a little. It never went back to the 2,300 price point, unfortunately. Right. But we've seen normal used M4s going for 15,000, like, yeah, 5-6 years ago. Not the very early ones, because there is a bit of a small difference, and one went for 80 or 90,000. But a regular Blackman M4 went for between 10 to 15, and now they went back between 6 to 10, somewhere in this range, yeah, right, which is right, which is the normal price from 2008 or 2010. Yeah, right. It's not at that 2004 level when you've bought your camera, but it's not at the peak, you know.
Right.
It's not at the peak anymore, which I find good, because a lot more people get into it. If right, if it's not at the highest price point, there are a lot more people coming in. There are all regular users who want a black pen and
camera. Yeah,
exactly. And then, I mean, it's still, if you think about it, it's crazy. You spend at least €20,000 if you have a black pen lens and a black pen camera. That's really a lot of money. I mean, it's absurd.
It's crazy. Yeah, it's absurd.
I'm not using one for myself. You know, I'm surrounded by that, but I'm not having one for myself. Because
On how many, you know, this is something that people talk about, but they just don't know enough about it. But how many fakes are out there?
Oh.
Like, is this something you come across when you're buying cameras, or is it something that, are they getting better with technology, and how does that work?
I never even thought about that.
There are two stories. One is a very old story, which goes back to the 60s, 70s, and 80s, where the fakers, which came mostly from the Eastern Bloc, made fake military engravings on screw mount cameras. I'm not talking about the bad fakes on Zorkis, or these golden Zorkis, which you can get in which you could get in Moscow on the main square for $100. I'm talking about real fakes to fool collectors. These were done on purpose and to fool real collectors. So these were the earliest fakes. And then for, let's say, an M3 or M4 or an M2, we have three or four stages, actually. One is the original camera in untouched condition. Then we have an original camera, which has been refurbished in the factory, as I mentioned before, which is still a real Leica from the official batch, but Leica made the refurbishment. Then there are cameras out of the known serial number batches, which are made on order of a photographer or of an early cast. So this is not considered to be an official camera, basically, but comes still out of the factory. And then there is real fake stuff. And I'm not talking about chrome cameras, which are now painted black by Encanto from Japan, does an amazing job, for example. I'm not talking about these, because these are made for the photographer who wants to use it. They're not intended fakes, basically. But there is a stage in between where they used not Canto, where people made fake M cameras to be as original, like originals, you know, used originals with patina and stuff like that. In the last 20 years, these were really easy to spot, but they are getting better and better and better and better. So a trained eye can see it very easily, basically. Sometimes you have to open the camera and check several things inside, which we do, obviously. But for the untrained eye, if you walk into a shop and see and you're looking for Black Panther M4, let's say, or you've heard about the Black Panther M4, and it's trading between $6,000 to $10,000 now, and this camera stands somewhere, and the price point is $4,000, and you go, oh, that's a bargain, you know, and right. Snap that camera up, you're fooled, you know.
Yeah.
So things like that happen. On lenses as well, you can't imagine, there's so many small details, and we have come across fakes, obviously, in every variety you can imagine. But we get them all sorted out, you know, there are no fakes.
Right,
without,
right,
you,
right,
we,
right.
That's
right.
Amazing. That's, people, such, that's a good question.
People
wow.
are banned here, you know, for bringing this now.
Yeah.
I love that.
All right, gosh, we could do hours with
I
you,
know,
Joe.
It's
I'm
so
realizing.
Good.
But just to round this out, what do you think in terms of the collecting phase of the hobby? What do you think the next, like, emergent camera? Do you see in the near future? Do you think that there is something that is kind of in the way, like all of a sudden, like Mamiya RBs and RZs have become incredibly collectible, people pay a lot of money. The Bronicas have made a big comeback. Dude, what do you think is coming up next if you were going to forecast what the next great collector game is?
If I would have a crystal ball.
yes.
No, I think, but we mentioned that already. I think if you look into Canon and Nikon, Canon Nikon rangefinders, yeah. for example, and you go into black paint, for example, there are many more than Leicas. Okay, no problem with that. There are approximately, I don't know, 1,000 something, 200, 300, 500 Nikon S2 in black paint finish. There are also only 1,400 to 1,500 M3 in black paint finish. But an M3 costs like 30 to 100,000, depending on which one. And the Nikon S2 in black paint finish, same numbers you can get for 3 to 8,000, you know, it's just same with Canon 7 black paint, Canon P black paint, Canon L1, L3, VT Deluxe. I think these are all still undervalued, in my opinion. Of course, they made quite a lot, but as we said as well, like, is the cash cow. But I think these deserve a little bit more attention, actually.
Yeah. Okay. Gabe, anything else to round it out? Anything else from you?
I guess the, you know, the real last one is, what is your holy grail camera? What's that camera that you're going to be, someone comes into your shop and you're going, that's the one we need to have.
I had it already.
Oh, it's so good.
Is it the gold Alpa 11SI that you had on display?
We had as well, but that's not my grail. Maybe your grail. Yeah. No, it's not my grail camera. No, obviously, a Leica Zero is basically the holy grail.
Boy.
Yeah.
But apart from rarity and most expensive camera you can get, for me it would be, it's also not that cheap, it's a Leica M3 prototype, but if someone never in the history of camera retail has anybody walked in with a Leica M3 prototype and said, look what I found in the attic, you know, never. So it's, this might never happen, especially not in Vienna. If you're in Wetzlar, maybe yes, but it's quite difficult. But you know, I'm in paradise here. I can have whatever I want and try out whatever
I
want.
It's the best. It's the best.
Yeah. At home, there are only three cameras, actually.
What? Which ones?
Yeah. Great. Let's hear it.
Ah, it's a Leica M6. Badang. Great surprise. It's one of those Voigtländer 6x7, which I like.
Oh. Yeah,
The Bessa 3. This I use quite frequently. And the other one is the point-and-shoot. My daughter is using frequently and wastes about 100 films a year. with
which point and shoot is that?
Gosh, some Canon. It's a Canon. It's actually a Canon from the World Cup of Soccer in 1992 in the US, a limited edition.
Wow,
super
great.
Rare.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, go ahead, Gabe. Were you going to say something?
No, you're good.
Sorry. Oh, Joe, you're amazing. God, thank you for taking the time to talk to us. Once again, guys, if you are planning travels in Europe, make this a stop, okay? It's Mint and Rare on Instagram, Joe Geier, G-E-I-E-R. Incredible guy. If you have a celebration, we will fly there to join you for your 10th anniversary.
Exactly.
But it's an incredible shop. I also want to thank, I've totally forgotten which listener put you and I in touch, but it was someone who walked into the shop based on hearing about it on our show, right? I think that's how this all got started.
Yeah.
Because when I went into your shop, I was too afraid to talk to anybody.
No. You can talk to anybody. We're quite friendly people in Austria.
Obviously. Yeah. But thanks for the time. This has been amazing. And gang, let's hear your response. We want to hear your response.
I have one more thing.
Questions?
I have one more thing.
Go ahead,
to say.
Gabe. Do it,
look,
man.
A lot of you out there, you hear Mint and Rare and you get a little nervous. There's no need to be nervous. Your prices are amazing. The condition is fantastic. And that fear has to go away, because in the United States, you hear Mint and Rare, you're not going anywhere near that store. It's going to be very nerve-wracking because you know what's to come. And and it's the prices are great and everyone's amazing there, and you're going to get a quality piece that will last forever. So I'm just telling you, you should head over there.
Thank you very much. Thanks for pronouncing my name correctly, first of all. We have quite a large following in the US, so I'm a little bit shook by that. So we have to get rid of that image, I would say, but yeah. Mint and Rare sounds just simply amazing. And
it's amazing.
Yeah,
yes.
I think the 10th anniversary is in late September. So,
all right. Well, it could happen. I'm going to be I mean, it could happen. I
we gotta
seem
figure
to be
out
in Europe
trip.
More
make
than
sure.
I thought I would.
Well, yeah. You will have to explain it to somebody, I guess. No, please reach out anytime. I'm happy to be on the Smash Hit podcast.
We're so happy.
Anytime. I listened to so many episodes recently, and I always wanted to contribute because you said something, and then I said, no, it's not like that. Maybe it's like this. And then, so I was really into that. Please have me.
I count on it. You've been an amazing guest. I mean, we took much more of your time than we said we would.
Fantastic.
And yes, and thanks for staying in the shop so late to make time to talk to us. We appreciate it. Gabe has got to see this place.
I can't
wait. Gabe would lose his mind.
I can't wait.
It's an incredible shop.
Yep.
But Joe, thanks again. You've been fantastic. This will be our next one up, so it'll probably post in the next week or so. We will give you a heads up when we put it all together.
Yes, please. I'll have to show that to you.
Ah!
Oh, beautiful.
Did they make a matching olive lens for that?
No.
Or just the body?
This was just the body just with a green case and a green box. And it's so rare in Europe. It's unbelievable.
A great machine. I just got an F1 for the first time a couple of months ago. I got the Lake Placid Olympics edition, which was very cheap. Just a couple hundred dollars. And I had never, I am kind of a Canon guy. My first SLR was a Canon EF, which I still have and love. But I had, for some reason, I'd had a Pelix, I'd had an FTB, I had everything but an F1. The F1 is great.
Yeah. The early one.
This is why I'm glad that you, what's that?
The early one.
Not the later one. Yeah, the early one. This is why I'm glad that you talked about Canons on the show, because I think Canons are chronically undervalued.
Yeah. I think so too. Yeah,
yeah.
And they made some great product, and it's also very reliable. There is no issue with those crinkles or wrinkles in the shutter on the metal shutter on the Canon 7s, and the rangefinders are just as good as Leica made them. You know, sometimes even better, basically. Yeah.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, thank you again, my friend. This has been fantastic.
Thanks for having me.
We hope to talk to you again soon. Well, and listen, if we say something stupid on the show, write to us. We
love it.
You can find your way into the prodigious mailbag.
Great. I'll do so.
Thanks again.
All right.
Good.
Take care. This was fantastic.
Bye-bye. And hit it.
Wow. Okay, so this wraps up an unusual episode 72 of I Dream of Cameras. Here's where you can find us. You can go to idreamofcameras.com for all your I Dream of Cameras needs. The prodigious mailbag will return in our next episode. You can find us at idreamofcameras@gmail.com. If you would like to follow us on the thing the kids call Instagram, we would be I Dream of Cameras. Gabe is Gabe Sachs. I am S. Jeff Greenstein, because Jeff Greenstein is a tax fraud felon. Gabe, whom do we have to thank?
We have so many people to thank. First of all, Joe Geyer, who is just amazing. Katie Bonzer at LA Photography Club. We have to thank everyone who participated in the show, especially our very close family, which is Keith Greenstein for giving us this amazing look to our show, and all the merch and all that stuff. You got to go to idreamofcameras.com. And then, of course, Fred Corey, who gives us our sound and our sound bites and our beautiful theme music. And just everyone in our I Dream of Cameras family that support us when we do something crazy like this. This is our first remote, partial remote broadcast. So we're very, very happy. And I'll leave you with this. Everyone go to a camera meetup as fast as you can. You will meet other nerds like yourself, and they will understand you and won't stare blankly at you like you've lost your mind. Have an amazing week, and we will see you. Actually, have an amazing 2 weeks. We'll see you soon.